This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
It's all about living your best life
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
Hi, I'm Helen Farmer. Great to have you with us for the Afternoons with Helen Farmer podcast. On today's show, a bit of a career and cash focus. We were speaking to Zurich Middle East about, well, why exactly you do need coverage, a special look, of course, at Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and frankly, shocking the number of claims that they've had from women here in the UAE. What about the business of love? We were speaking to the co-founder of Mingle DXB. After seeing an awful lot of frustrated singles who are sick of swiping, they have set up a regular event to introduce them. So we wanted to hear your love stories and ask, would you go to a mingle too? And work perks. What have been some of your best during your career? We had them all, from parking spaces to half-price cookies. But how has the pandemic affected those perks and add-ons? David McKenzie of McKenzie Jones was on hand to talk about how to negotiate in a post-pandemic world. Is flexibility more important than freebies? And speaking to Great Place to Work in the MENA region, that list is out. What companies have topped the charts?
Money Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Zurich Life Insurance, take optimistic action and shape your financial future with Zurich Life Insurance.
Dubai Eye 103.8.
We are here for you this hour, answering your questions, your queries. October, of course, Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And this disease is sadly one of the most common causes of death for women in the region. Many patients finding themselves struggling financially after undergoing that diagnosis, having treatment and being off work as well. So one thing you can do, of course, to avoid the situation is get screened. The earlier it is diagnosed, the better, especially if you are high risk. And the other thing you need to keep in mind is having enough money to cover those expenses when you get ill, whether it's from breast cancer or other diseases. To explore this and more is Simon Price, the head of market management for Zurich Middle East. If you do have any questions, as I said, get in touch, 4001. Simon, lovely to have you back. How have you been? Things are feeling pretty busy around Dubai, or is it just me?
Helen, it's great to be back, and it's my birthday last week.
Aww,
so one year older, and it's great seeing a busy Dubai, so fantastic.
Good. Oh, good, and please. Now, we are here marking Breast Cancer Awareness Month. They're coming to the end of the month, and just to be clear, we should be getting checked year round, but it is good to have this month of education around early diagnosis and some of the practical steps you can take should you be affected by this disease. Can you talk to us a little bit about the financial protection that's available to women for critical illnesses such as breast cancer, Simon?
Yeah, sure. Actually, I think last time we talked about the difference between health insurance and life insurance and critical illness insurance, I think that we specialize in health insurance here at Zurich. Your medical insurance will pay a lot of your day-to-day needs when you go to the hospital, getting the right treatment. However, what it won't cover in the majority of cases is what will happen outside of the hospital. Mm-hmm. You know, whether or not you're losing income because you can't work the same, because you have to change your life or your home, and so on and so forth. So what we offer here at Zurich is policies that can help you in the unfortunate event that you are diagnosed with cancer, to then give you a lump sum to help you then ease those burdens.
And this really can't be understated in terms of taking that, you know, emotional pressure off as well. You know, once you're not worrying about the money side, hopefully you'll be in a more positive mindset when you are undergoing treatment. And there's no saying how someone's going to respond to chemo, to the various medications that are available. Some people might absolutely breeze through it. Other people, as you say, might need to take time off work, completely change their lives and dedicate themselves to fighting like that good fight. And I just wondered if you'd got any data that you could share. What have the claims been like when it comes to women and Zurich Middle East?
Well, yeah, look, I mean, we're talking today about breast cancer, and what we do see in our data here in the Middle East is that out of our critical illness claims for women, you know, 85% are actually coming from cancer. Wow. which is one of the prevalent risks that women will be facing. In terms of amounts, as you said, it varies from individual to individual. I was reading an article the other day where it's looking just normal kind of day-to-day living, it may be in excess of $1 million a year extra to what you haven't got on top of your health insurance. And as you say, Helen, it'll be different to each individual, but what is clear is these risks are real and what we do see in real life.
And as we've discussed before, it feels like such a grown-up thing to do, to worry about that, you know, financial future of yourself and your family, but it is something you can control. That's what we're talking about this afternoon.
Money Matters.
On Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Zurich Life Insurance. Take optimistic action and shape your financial future with Zurich Life Insurance.
Dubai Eye 103.8.
As you heard earlier, breast cancer, one of the deadliest cancers in the region, and 85% of all claims of critical illness in women were for cancer. Joining us today is Simon Price, Head of Market Management from Zurich Middle East. He's answering all of your questions about insurance. Now, earlier this year, we had a survivor on the show. Risha Bagnari is a wife, a mother, a business owner who's lived in Dubai for 20 years, and she was diagnosed with breast cancer in August last year, has undergone 16 sessions of chemotherapy, 25 radiation sessions, and is now cancer-free. This is what she told us last time.
Health insurance covers most of the treatments, which are, like chemotherapy is covered, radiation is covered, but it doesn't cover a lot of other things like port insertion, which you need. It's a keyhole surgery, which has to be done before the chemotherapy starts. The plastic surgery, which is required, in case you decide to go for an implant, because you still want to feel like a woman and you want everything aligned and you want to keep looking good. As women, we are always conscious of the way we're looking and so on. So, it doesn't cover all that. So hence, it's very important to have some kind of a plan in place in order to make sure that what is not covered by health insurance, you're actually prepared for that expense as well.
And this is the information that's actually really useful, to be honest, to hear from someone who has been through it. And this is how life insurance really impacted her experience.
I had actually started the Zurich insurance saving around 15 years back. So I didn't have to touch my savings at all. Zurich was quick in responding. The moment I sent them the reports that I was diagnosed, they actually sent me the amount, just before I even started my chemotherapy. So it was such a relief, when you see an amount, your financial... You're worried about so many things which are happening around you. So one less thing to worry about is the finance, and that's what Zurich took care of.
Amazing story, and really just kind of drive home the importance of this, Simon. Again, many people have asked us on the show how insurance works for you if you do get ill. Can you explain it in kind of simple terms for us? Would that be okay?
Well, first of all, we're so grateful for Risha to share her story. It's a really inspirational one, and I urge everybody to go to our website zurich.ae to have a look at the video. It's fantastic. It's pretty straightforward. What we cover is critical illnesses, so things like cancer, heart attack, stroke, so something that's going to be pretty major in your life, and then obviously we cover when people unfortunately do pass away as well. So what we offer isn't for these kind of small things when you're just going to the hospital, you need something to get done quickly. Mm-hmm. It's really, as Risha says, it's the things you aren't anticipating. You're almost the things when you leave the hospital that will then need to either help you for the rest of your life or help your dependents for the rest of theirs once you've unfortunately left this earth. So really that's where we at Zurich here in the Middle East can help.
Going to the text line, Simon, lots of people getting in touch wanting some clarity, information as well. No name on this message, and you can be completely anonymous. We really don't mind, saying, if I have a history of cancer in my family, how is insurance affected? Is it calibrated based on family history and a person's own chronic conditions? Great question.
We've been underwriting individuals here for the last 30 years, and everybody's own personal health and their lifestyle is unique to them. We actually accept 99% of the cases that come to us. And really, if you do have past medical histories, or even if you're recovering, the most common one we see is obviously raised BMI, raised blood sugar. We know there's a prevalence of diabetes. What I do say to people is be open, honest, and our underwriters know what they're doing, and we'll give you a proper rating as you go through that process. But believe me, even if you do have something that's pre-existing or chronic, we do tend to accept most people.
Okay, really useful.
Money Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Zurich Life Insurance, take optimistic action and shape your financial future with Zurich Life Insurance.
Dubai I 103.8.
We are answering your questions this afternoon, and when I say we, I don't mean me, definitely not. Our expert of the hour is Simon Price, the head of market management from Zurich Middle East. Lots of people getting in touch wanting some clarity, some information when it comes to live critical illness cover as well. We've been talking about breast cancer in particular today, Simon. Shayla, really interesting question here to do with payment plans, really, saying, can you make a yearly payment for your insurance instead of monthly? And does that affect the premiums?
We're happy to set yearly, monthly. Some of our policies are actually quarterly and half yearly, if that where flexibility suits the customer. There is no real massive difference between the premiums. It's more around the affordability and what's best for the customer.
What really suits? Okay, good. Good question. Thank you for that, Shayla. And Sana wants to know, and we are talking about perks, by the way, after 4 o'clock today. So let us know your best work perk that you've had in your life. We've had already messages about gyms and flexibility. But what about other perks? Sana's saying, does life insurance come with other perks apart from its main purpose? I have no idea. Does it? Could it? Can it?
Yeah, look, I mean, a lot of our policies will have extra benefits. If you go to our website, you can see those different ones. So, for instance, we tend to give free aeroplane cover if you're unfortunate to die in an aeroplane crash and so on and so forth. So each policy will have some extra things. But if you go to our website, you can have a look and see what we do there.
A lot of people getting in touch wanting to know about implications around salaries as well. No name on this one, and it's absolutely fine to be completely anonymous. We know when it comes to health or professional matters, privacy is, of course, important. So no name asking, what is the minimum salary required for taking out life insurance? Does it work that way, Simon? Are you able to offer any assistance?
No, it doesn't really work that way. Anybody, you know, we offer cover from as small as 3 dirhams a day. So whatever your salary, as long as you can afford it, you know, we're more than happy to accept people. So we don't use salary as a key indicator for accepting people or not.
And a question here kind of following up from that, saying, if I lose my job, can life insurance or any insurance offer financial relief? How does that work?
It's not something that we do. If it's like an independent loss of job or you just unfortunately been made redundant, that's not what we cover. Mm-hmm. We only cover when people pass away or get a critical illness.
Okay, any questions for Simon Price, do get in touch on 4001. It's always kind of interesting to see what kind of trends you're noticing as well, especially around age groups. You know, you mentioned earlier, we're talking about Breast Cancer Awareness Month, of course. Any information on kind of age of claims? And we've also had questions as well, wanting to know when you should sign up to get life insurance. Can you offer some insights there, Simon?
Yeah, sure. If you look at our, again, these are numbers from people here in the UAE. So this is not a global number. Our average claimant on critical illness is actually 49 years old, which with my birthday last week, I'm 1 year closer to. It's also, we have some very young claimants in their 20s, but again, that's when people get that. In terms of when to get it, obviously, when you're younger, you tend to be healthier. So life insurance tends to be fairly cheap in terms of that. As you get older, obviously, the risk of mortality increases, therefore the premium goes up. There's no real right time, but people tend to think of it as when they get married, when they have children, mm-hmm. when they have a mortgage. These kind of trigger events tend to get people to think about these topics. And I know myself, it's not something I really thought about in my 20s. I tend to think about it in my 30s. And that tends to be our average age of customers. Actually, I can't remember the exact number. I think it's about 34. It's on our website in terms of the average age when somebody starts taking out a policy with us.
When people start feeling like they're a natural grown-up.
Money Matters
on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
With Zurich Life Insurance, take optimistic action and shape your financial future with Zurich Life Insurance.
Dubai I 103.8.
Simon Price joining us this afternoon, Head of Market Management at Zurich Middle East. And we've had lots coming in today, lots of people wanting clarity, more information on life insurance, critical illness cover as well. Renan wants to know, is it advisable to get joint insurance with my husband or get two individual ones? What is the difference? Great question. Something that was on my mind as well. So thank you for that. What do you think, Simon?
Yeah, sure. Actually, about 20% of our protection policies are actually taken out between two people, normally a man and a wife, obviously. And really what happens in like a standard policy, it'll be what we call joint life first kind of death. So if you're insured for $1 million under that policy, the first one to pass away would then trigger the amount of payment that is then due. So that's the way most of them work. Now, we do have other policies that would pay on both lives dying, or if you need individual policies, then it would be $1 million for the first life and then $1 million for the second life. So they're all slightly different. I think the key thing when you're answering this question is, what do you need the insurance for? Mm-hmm. Is it paying off a mortgage? Is it helping your kids into the future? So I think once you decide that, a good advisor should be then able to help you understand what's the right structure of the policy, and then equally run you through some different illustrations and numbers to then help you understand what's the right choice for yourself. But I think the key thing is, it's fairly common that we do see both a husband and wife looking to be insured under the same policy.
Okay, really hope that helps. Thank you for that. Really do appreciate it. Looking for some clarity here is Anonymous on 4001 saying, we took out insurance with Zurich back in 2014, made monthly payments for over 2 years, but we ran out of funds and couldn't continue paying. We asked our broker in 2017 if we could resume payments, and he said it wouldn't be possible. What is the best thing to do here? Probably paid about 35 grand already, and it would be a huge shame for that to go to waste. Is there any kind of recourse here or anything that this listener can do, Simon?
Yeah, look, it's difficult without knowing all the details. What I'd say to the listener, look, please get in contact with us directly. Our numbers are all on our website, and we can see what we can do for you. But that's all we can do. Obviously, your broker's there to help. If you don't feel you're getting the right service from the broker, please reach out to us. Our numbers and our contact details are on our web for you to then give us a call.
Okay, brilliant. Simon Price, really appreciate your time this afternoon, your insights as well. And as you said, head to the website. So much information there. People can start putting together their packages, get the answers that they need if they haven't been able to get through to us this afternoon here on Dubai Eye. Take care of yourself and yours, and happy belated birthday. Really do appreciate it. We'll be back with Zurich Middle East next month as well, of course.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Let me know, people, how do single people meet partners here in Dubai? Can you find love in a hopeless place? Let me know. I'm genuinely curious. If you're coupled up, where did you meet your other half? If you're single and looking for someone or frustrated, join the chat. We're joined now live on Microsoft Teams by Paul Hart. He's founded Mingle DXB. It's a group that runs events specifically for single people to meet up. Paul, how are you?
I'm great, Helen. How are you today?
I am good. Personal question, are you coupled up?
I am. And a personal answer, I'm coupled up because of Mingle DXB.
Did you get to take privileges from being one of the founders and were there on the door going, you're not allowed to go in, but I'll definitely take your number?
Invested interest, perhaps.
Yes.
Yeah, maybe.
So you found love in Dubai. I met my husband, I was just saying to Zina, about 11 years ago, but we met on a blind date. We were set up. Zina met her husband through a work thing. And now, I've got to be honest, hugely grateful that I wasn't single in Dubai during a time of dating apps, because it seems like an absolute minefield out there, Paul. It honestly does. And every single person I speak to, every single person, is saying it's really hard to find love through dating apps. You know, transient place, bit of a Peter Pan syndrome. Lots of people have hang-ups, lots of dishonesty. So I'm curious where your idea for Mingle DXB came from. Was it born out of this frustration that we're hearing from so many people?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at the start of summer this year, we identified that this was a great opportunity. People are basically frustrated with swiping. They don't like the apps. They find them frustrating. COVID regulations, obviously, over the last year to 2 years has made meeting people face to face even harder. But even before that and after that, it's still pretty frustrating for the masses. And people just want to meet people face to face with no pressure, not being set up, not a blind date. They just want to meet in a really relaxed environment. And that's why Mingle was born.
And presumably people wanting to be in the same place with the same thing in mind, which is wanting to meet a partner, rather than going to a bar and trying to kind of, you know, look at the left hand and guess if there's a wedding ring or guess if there's someone kind of behind the scenes. Everyone in that room is really there for the same purpose. And many people saying where they've met their partners in Dubai, Rita Barasti. You're not the first and you won't be the last. Amelia saying, sure, you meet people on apps, but 5 minutes into the chat, you learn they've got the personality of a cardboard box. Ouch. Tanya, met my partner while on holiday in Spain 3 years ago. He came here last year, married soon after. Couldn't find a man here, believe it or not. Paul running these events for singles. He's not the first one to do it, but he says he's had some high success rates so far.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
The very appropriately named Paul Hart is with us. He is founder of Mingle DXB. They put together events for single people here in Dubai. And lots of questions for you, sir, on 4001. Farah wanting to know, how do you make these events low pressure? The fact that everyone knows you're there to meet people is pretty high pressure. Can you tell us a little bit about what these events look like in practice, like, you know, in terms of everything from people finding out about them to you putting together these groups of people and what happens on the night?
Yeah, of course. That's a very good question. Very good question. So we advertise all of our events on our Instagram, which is at MingleDXB. We also have a Facebook page, but we run all the bookings and we announce all the advertisements through Instagram. It's a private group with approximately 3,000 private members just in a few months. So there's obviously good supply and demand for this. So our events take two forms. We have Mingle events, which is we create a sort of fun, respectful and low pressure environment. And just to answer Farah's question, how do we create a low pressure environment? Well, everybody's single, everybody's welcomed by our Mingle team. There's no pressure to meet people. There's no pressure to even talk to anybody. You can bring your friends, single friends along. If you come alone, we'll make sure that you sit with other people that have come on their own. And in fact, some of our success stories have been single people meeting other single friends who they can then obviously have a lot in common with moving forward. We create a low pressure environment because there's no pressure at all to mingle. However, we create a really nice environment. Our team's there to make introductions if you want a gentle nudge, but there's absolutely no pressure. And you know, in that room, as you mentioned earlier, Helen, everybody is single. We work on a ratio of 50% male, 50% female. And we don't discriminate on age or anything else. But everybody is single and everybody comes, you know, everybody's a little bit nervous. Everybody's in the same boat. So, you don't get big groups that are sort of confident because they're with lots and lots of friends who might not be single. So everybody's in the same boat.
Great question from Elisa on 4001 saying, do you host mingle nights that are themed, such as particular age groups? Because imagine, you know, being single when you're 22 is very different to being single when you're 42, for example. What experience have you had of that in the past or any plans for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our mingle events have anything from 100 to 300 people. So there's a great range. There's kind of somebody for everyone, if that makes sense. So there's a really broad range of ages. But of course, we have people perhaps over 40 that wouldn't necessarily want to be in an environment where there's a load of sort of, you know, 21 plus people. So we have mingle overs. Events or sections at some of our events, but generally we try not to discriminate. I mean, who's to say that you won't have a connection with somebody a little bit older or a little bit younger? So it's more about the connection, we believe. So we create an environment. There's, you know, we have high numbers of people at our events, so we believe that, you know, everybody has a great chance of meeting friends or more if they want and if they're lucky.
I like people making friends. That's nice. But I'm more interested in the more. Have you had any? How long have you been running? Is it too early for, you know, a mingle engagement, Paul?
We haven't had a mingle engagement yet, but we have a large number of people who politely decline our invites to our events because they're now in serious or semi-serious romantic relationships with people they met at Mingle, which is fantastic. A lot of other people are in touch With people they met at Mingle. And as I said, loads of people are now sort of good friends with people they met at Mingle as well. So some really, really good success stories. I won't name and shame, but as I mentioned earlier, it certainly works.
I love it. I've got a massive smile on my face. I love the idea of people kind of taking positive action and meeting people who've got perhaps similar frustrations about going out, being the only single person in their friendship group, and wanting to meet someone who is also looking for a relationship. As I said, I was set up on a blind date with my husband, and I'm a firm believer that we were both ready for a relationship, and we were both in the right headspace. But I 100% would have gone to something like this. I really would have done. And so many messages, Paul, coming through saying, can you remind us of the Instagram? So can you tell people where to find you online?
Yeah, of course. We're on Instagram. It's at MingleDXB. We announce all of our events. We've actually got a mega Mingle event on the 5th of November. Remember the 5th of November.
Fireworks, indeed. Remember.
Yeah, exactly. Fireworks, no pun intended. So we're running a huge event, which is actually the first of its kind. It is a Friday evening singles event with 300 people at an amazing venue in Media City. And yeah, we're taking bookings now. We've already sold 200 of the tickets. We've got 100 left. So hurry. I'm not a mathematician, but 50% of 300 is 150 single guys and 150 single ladies. So it's going to be a wonderful event. Again, it's going to be a chance to meet face to face in a fun, respectful and no pressure environment. The Mingle team will be on hand to help with introductions if anybody needs.
Is it weird to have FOMO when I'm married? Because it does sound like a lot of fun. Paul, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. Message saying, why don't you make this into a TV show? Great idea. Watch this space. And loads of you getting in touch to share how you met your partners. Paul, really appreciate your time. All the best to you and the Mingle team. And let us know how the fifth goes. I want to hear more success stories about finding love here in Dubai.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking romance this afternoon. Just speaking earlier to Paul Hart of Mingle DXB. They have a company that introduces single people through mingling events. And I want to know, how did you meet your other half? Was it here in Dubai? Did you move here together? I, after being single, dating in Dubai for a while, was set up on a blind date with my now husband coming up to 11 years ago now. I'm interested. Would you, if you were single now, go to Mingle? Are you keen to go now? The business of love. Troy saying, met my match. She was receptionist at a Dubai dental clinic. She was scared of me when we first met. I was a poor patient. Alina saying, on the Messenger app, I've given up. I'm not ugly, I'm not a loser, but tired. I'm just so tired. So how did you meet your spouse? Would you go to a speed dating event? Speaking now to Suman Manning. She married with triplets. She's the founder of Twins Plus Arabia and met her husband Shane over a decade ago. Suman, how are you?
Hi, Helen. How are you doing?
I'm well. I'm feeling all romantic after hearing some of these success stories and even just people meeting people that they can go out with, you know, as wing men and wing women. Now, as I said, you've been married for over a decade. You've got triplets. Picture perfect family. But like many of us, like me, you started out as a single woman in Dubai. Tell us about the dating scene back in your heyday.
Oh, my goodness. I've been here 25 years. I know it's incredibly old when I say that, but I came here when I was 22. So I spent my youth, I would say, single and had 14 years before I got married. So yeah, I met my husband eight. God, my maths is terrible. I met my I met Shane 8 years after I got here. So just before my 30th birthday.
I was the same, late 20s. So Dubai's been really good to you and you've built a really successful business here. And, you know,
I love Dubai.
Me too. Had, you know, family here, met my husband here. How did you meet Shane, though? How did it all come about?
It was a real freak of, you know, a massive coincidence. But we were out in a very brawly drinking establishment. So we were out at a new place that had just opened. So I was out with my girlfriends. Shane was out with some of the boys he worked with. And we just ended up being in the same place. And he was wearing a T-shirt, actually, which was quite rude. And I walked past him and I remember looking at it and just shaking my head. And he came by much later, about half an hour ago, and said, you know, I need to ask you something. And this was his chat-up line, which is, he cringes, but it was actually really unique. And he said to me, are you spoken for?
Aww.
And I know. But anybody who's met Shane or knows Shane just know that it's totally not him. He doesn't look the way who would say that. You know, Shane's covered in tattoos and he had a big afro with piercings then. Oh my God, what, I'm not painting a very nice picture, but bless him. That's what he said. He said, are you spoken for? And I remember just stopping and saying, who talks like that? You know, mm-hmm. And then I said, no, I'm not. And he said, look, I'm going on a business trip. When I come back, you know, can I take you out for a meal? And everything was just not matching the package. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, I was very intrigued. And I said, yeah, where are you going on your business trip? And he said, I'm going to India. And he could never have known that my hometown is Bangalore, which is where I'm from. And I said, oh, so where in India are you going? And he said, I'm going to Bangalore for work. And when I come back, you know, I'd like to take you out. And I could not believe he was going to my little hometown. So all my aloofness went out the window, and I was like, oh my God.
Let me tell
so
you
exciting.
Where to eat. You need
yes,
to meet my
exactly.
auntie. The full deal.
Best friend, actually.
that
is exactly how it went down.
And then when you got back, you did have that date. When did you think it was going to be something serious?
I would say, because he actually called me from India to say thank you for all the recommendations, because he asked for my number. I didn't give him my number. He gave me his. Mm-hmm. So I got in touch a week later and said, you know, I'm the girl you met, and I'm so excited to go into my city. This is all the places you should go to. And I emailed him. And he got my number from there, and he contacted me and said, you know, thanks so much. It's a fantastic city. And we had a bit of a chat on the phone. And we had so many things in common. You know, he talked about his family a lot. And when he came here, I remember really liking his smile a lot. And then we had so many things in common. We just got along really, really well. He was so easy to talk to. He'd done a lot. He's in the events industry. He traveled. So he had lots of stories. And I just think we both knew very early on that we wanted to be together.
Oh,
the packaging just didn't match. I didn't know how I was going to tell my parents that, you know, I was interested in this tattooed guy, because I come from a very liberal family, but still, you know, tattoos weren't the norm.
Body makeup, tattoo removal, if it got really serious.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a massive romantic. I want to hear about the proposal. How did he propose?
Again, if he's listening, he's going to cringe. We were at Robbie Williams. I was doing a challenge for Girls for Good, like
oh,
you just did.
No way.
Yeah, so my best friend and I were going to Mongolia. We were doing the fundraiser for the Christina Noble Foundation. Mm-hmm. And so we were trying to scalp tickets for Robbie Williams to raise money towards our fundraiser. So we bought tickets, and Robbie Williams is we were huge fans, and we were right in the front of the queue. We were super excited and talked about it all day, and Shane's seen and worked in the Robbie events, many, many festivals. So he was with us, and he asked me at the Robbie concert, not before he started singing or during, I mean, before he started singing, not during Angels or anything cringy like that, but but he did propose at the Robbie concert. He said he'd never seen me as happy and excited, and he just wanted that day to be even more special.
Aww.
And he didn't go down on one knee. He was standing behind me, and he kind of held me, and he said, this is so ironic as well. He said, will you have babies with me?
Oh, not right now.
Oh, and he didn't get the plural, so I do blame
sweet.
Him a little bit for being, yeah.
Oh, Suma, honestly, we've got so many messages coming in on our Facebook and on 4001, people sharing their kind of success stories, but also sharing a lot of frustration as well. George saying, where are the single ladies? So, I know. Well, it's interesting, isn't it?
I do think I met more people when I was working, though, you know, working, being out and about. I think being a mom with kids, their mums are now my friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's very different. I was thinking that the other day, you know, I have a lot of single friends, great women. I'm not going to call them girls. They're great women who are also having trouble finding a nice guy, somebody who, you know, is not looking for the next person and who's going to be after them, I think.
Yeah. I think it is an interesting question here, saying, do you think there's a cutoff age when we start feeling like we're never going to meet the one, particularly in Dubai? And I had a friend who left Dubai at 32 because that was what she called her scary age. She was like, if I get to 32 and I haven't met someone, I think, you know, it's time to go back to the UK. And she ended up meeting someone actually in Amsterdam in a matter of months. And I don't think it was to do with Dubai being the problem. I think the fact that she was so dedicated to her job, she didn't have room in her life for somebody, you know, the way she was living and working in this city. And when she moved, she, you know, was able to change jobs and she was in a different mindset and she was enjoying herself on a weekend away. And of course, met someone really, really quickly. But you know, we do work really hard here in Dubai and we're working, you know, you've got to make space in your life for it. So would you have any advice for anyone, you know, looking to find love?
Oh, Lordy, I'm probably the worst person, but I, you know, there are a lot of people. There are lots and lots of singles out there in exactly the same boat looking for that other person. And I think a lot of luck plays into it, you know, good friends, maybe making that connection. I don't know, timing, you know, 32 is not an age to give up for sure.
Absolutely.
And I know people who've met their, you know, partners way later in life as well. And I think that's the beauty of, you know, love is it could happen anytime and anywhere. I think don't give up and just go out and be yourself. I think that's I look back at myself in my 20s and how I was always trying to fit in and be what somebody else wanted me to be or speak a certain way or dress a certain way. And I just think once I just relaxed a little bit, I think Shane always said he just caught my eye and he liked my red hair. And those are all the things that put so many other men off before. Mm-hmm. So I guess he liked me for those things.
That is lovely. It really is. I do kind of think a lot about, you know, the dating apps and how, you know, if, when you swipe, you know, it's that kind of constant search for something or someone better. And I think psychologically, that's not very helpful because we kind of forget that there are real people behind these profiles. And you know, I know when I was single, I didn't have like an extensive wish list of like he needs to be this tall or drive this car or have this job, but I did have a kind of a picture of what, you know, what I would have liked. And I think when you get older, and I definitely included, you know, myself in this, that you start to realize what you need rather than what you want. And for me, having dated some hideous men and been treated awfully, like, you know, like awful, I kind of realized that what I needed from somebody who could, you know, could become a lifelong partner was someone that was kind. I think kindness is such an underrated quality. And
so underrated.
Clever and funny and someone I could trust. You know, that's what I really needed. And I think when you kind of get away from that, you know, he needs to be 3 years older than me, or, you know, she needs to be, you know, from this background or have this job or this size, or, you know, all these kind of ridiculous criteria that we put upon ourselves or other people put on our heads, and you get back to the real basics. That's what, you
and
know, where the magic happens.
And all of those things change. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. Everybody listen to Helen. But this is it. Like when Shane and me met, we were so different. Like he was bigger. His job was different. And he, you know, ate and drank excessively. And now, after the kids were born, he's become a health freak. He's a triathlete. He's, you know, completely changed. And if I had to go, I remember this. And my best friend's coming in today from the UK. And I remember her looking at him when I said to her, I'm so excited to go out with him. And she said, I don't know if I can say this on air, but she said, I forbid you to go out with him. He's fat and he's got curly hair. And she was my bridesmaid at my wedding. And she absolutely adored him.
You knew he was husband material. Simon, thank you so much for being with us today. Really loved hearing your story.
Work-life balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
And loving your messages on how you met your partners. Single Sasha saying, my challenge is dealing with the expectations of the world, my parents, my friends, my neighbours. And Claudia saying, I'm finding that people here are too detached, super guarded, and in general don't value relationships that much. Billy, met my wife through a colleague's then girlfriend, been married for almost 5 years. Message here saying, went to Metallica concert in Abu Dhabi. On the way back to the parking, walked through the crowds and accidentally stepped on my now ex-fiance's foot. And that's how that whirlwind love started. Loving all of your story, guys. Absolutely gorgeous.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Talking work perks this afternoon. And about 10 years ago, workplaces were all about those tangible perks. You know, now workers, though, want something different from their employees. There seemed to be this kind of weird arms race, you know, free snacks, pool tables, in-house gyms, and the more kind of fun space. We know the ones, like had a slide. The better the freebies, the thinking seemed to go, the more likely people were to dedicate their working hours and probably more than that to the organization. But how has the pandemic affected what we as employees want? I want to know from you this afternoon, what is the best perk you've ever got from your job and what is on your wish list? What would you choose? Free lunch or a 4-day work week? Let us know your thoughts. David McKenzie joining us live on Microsoft Teams. He's the managing director of McKenzie Jones Middle East. David, you look like you're in a music studio. You've got you look like
Moby. Sandy just took the mickey out of me, saying I was wearing all black again.
You look like Moby. You look like you're honestly about to lay some serious tracks down. Good to see you, my friend. And it's so interesting to see what's coming through on 4001 about work perks, about what people really value. And some of them are what you might expect, you know, in terms of flexibility. But it's really interesting to, I'm going to give you a little sample. Majib saying, sounds silly, but a parking pass has been huge. The best part of being promoted. No Name saying, currently it's being able to choose my hours when COVID eases foreign travel, but only when and if I want to. In the past, I've had 5-star hotels, hospitality packages, visiting amazing properties I could never afford myself, and lots of parties with canapes. Rupesh saying, option to buy and sell holiday, meaning up to 35 days of annual leave a year, on-site gym, fitness instructor sessions, free parking, and a modern eco-friendly office. Let us know yours. We've also had Hillary talking about half-price leftover cookies, and I know what I would want. So, David, can I ask you then, how do you think company perks have changed, adjusted during COVID? And let's look at the last 18 months. What's your take?
The situation is, it's no longer about the perks, it's all about flexibility. Mm-hmm. I think the perks now for most employees are, can I leave early? Can I work 2 days a week from home? Is there flexibility to my hours? I think the days of, you know, having a spacecraft and a slide and a badger to stroke at work are probably over. I don't think people are that interested in those anymore. Maybe the badger, but not the rest.
A badger? Yeah. I'd love a work dog. That's the kind of perk I would like. Bring your spaniel to work day.
A lot of people did that. They, you know, bring your dog to work day so that you didn't have, and that was a perk, was because then you didn't have to get daycare for them. Mm-hmm. So, and people had creches in workplaces so the kids could come in. So, but those are all advantageous because they weren't frivolous perks. They were quite decent perks that helped your working life.
Well, it's interesting now, we're certainly seeing in the UK and the US, companies really having to tempt employees back to the office. You know, people have had it a year of going, well, I'm in my pajama bottoms. I can snack when I want. You know, I'm not having to think about parking or commuting. So you're going to have to make it worth my while to get back into that space that you're paying rent on. We're seeing the likes of Goldman Sachs offering free ice cream. Nuveen Investment Company is putting rooftop gardens complete with beehives. PwC giving people a cash bonus of £1,000 as their way of, quote, helping everyone adjust. So what do you think? Nice office or location still a plus?
Yeah, I think it is. But all these things are to benefit the company, because all they're trying to do is get people back into an office they've paid for. Mm-hmm. So if you look at real perks are things like flexibility for working mums, you know, who can do 2 days a week from home or do the drop-offs or early pickups. It's people that live far away that don't have to pay commuting charges. If you live in a Sharjah or somewhere, you'd have to go on the metro. So there's all these things that I think if you talk to employees now, and the war for talent is really hotting up, by the way. The market is very buoyant in some sectors, and clients now are having to say, right, when people come in, they don't ask about salary, about the job spec. A lot of people are asking, you know, what are the hours? What's your flexibility like? How can I work from home? Those are the questions now about perks.
That work-life balance. This is really being echoed, David, on 4001. Ben saying, complete autonomy around my day. Maybe not a perk, but I'm also held accountable if I'm not delivering. I think this is exactly what we're talking about. Although Michaela's saying, free breakfast, free fruit, and a birthday day off. So let us know, what kind of perks do you get? Or would you like to see? Would you like free food? Or would you prefer flexibility like a four-day working week?
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
David McKenzie joining us live on Microsoft Teams. He is the MD of McKenzie Jones Middle East. David, what's been your best work perk to date?
I knew you were going to ask me this. It's going to sound a bit flash. I got a Gulfstream G6.
What?
So when I was at Monster, I was European MD for Monster, and the chief exec basically lent me his plane for a week.
And competition closed.
I'm such a baller, aren't I?
You are. I am honestly, I was going to say, I get free Pepsi when we broadcast from Expo.
I get free gear now for Generation Tri. Actually, I've got some quite nice stuff recently, so that's a big perk for me.
That's good. Good stash. Can't beat it. Durette saying, I'm a teacher. Long holidays are definitely a huge perk. Flip side is the amount of work that goes into it. We do need those holidays. You certainly do as teachers. My days. Let us know yours. 4001. Love this from Ewan. When I was a student, got a job at a large butcher's chain. Money was okay. Work was quite hard. The bit I did not realise was that every Friday we were given a big bag of meat. Steak, burgers, all manner of things. My student house was very happy indeed. Nitin saying, I'm in aviation, so staff fares. And I love this from Wael saying, not dreading going in. I've had some horrible workplaces, but I love where I am now. Eradicating that anxiety every morning is priceless and definitely my favourite perk. Well said indeed. 4001. So David McKenzie, if anyone is in negotiations now for jobs, and you know, we know it's still a tough marketplace out there, but you're talking earlier about, yes, of course, salary is important, but it is that flexibility people are looking for. What's the best way to approach that in an interview or negotiation situation? When is the time to do that?
The thing is to figure out what's important to you. Don't just go with the flexibility thing if that's not an important thing for you. If it's more holiday or something like that, then go for that. But the best way to broach it is when you're in an interview, when you've had your first interview, that's the first date. So, you know, make sure you're on your best behavior for that. You tell them how good you are, etc. The second interview is when you start negotiating, because they obviously like you, they brought you back again. This is when you set your stall out and you start talking about what you would like, but talk about what career you want, what you want to do longer term, and then start talking about the perks you want. Don't just go in with, I want a G6 and I want a, you know, 3-day week, etc. You need to go in with realistic things about how you're going to help them as a company be better.
And often how those perks are going to help them as a company too, you know, in terms of that flexibility will allow me to do X, Y, Z and become the productive in this area. And it's a trade-off. It is a negotiation. A message here saying, is anyone getting bonuses these days? Good question. What are you hearing, David?
No. No, very few are. I think the companies have been so badly hit over the last couple of years. Very few are getting bonuses. And if companies are giving bonuses, they're quite small, or they're perks. Mm-hmm. They're saying, right, we can't afford to give you a bonus. We're going to give you the Christmas break off if you're a European, or we're going to give you a longer Eid break or something. They're trying to make up for it in different ways.
Interesting. Dave, thank you so much for your time today. Really, really appreciate it. And thank you, everyone, for getting in touch. As I said, we've had everything from bags of burgers to car park spaces, options to buy and sell holidays, travel as well. So thank you. It's really interesting to get a bit of a read on what matters to you in the workplace. We're looking at exactly that next. Dave McKenzie joining us there from McKenzie Jones. Do check him out on LinkedIn for all sorts of insights and articles.
Life Balance on Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
We are talking career this afternoon, and we spend an awful lot of the time where we work. Admittedly, the pandemic has meant they're working from home an awful lot, but what do you think makes a great place to work? Joining us from exactly there, a great place to work, Mina, is the Managing Director, Ibrahim Boukhabel. He is with us this afternoon to talk to us about who tops the list in a recent survey. So, Ibram, thank you so much for being with us this afternoon. I find this absolutely fascinating, to be honest, because I think we've all worked at companies where we've thought, this works, they've thought about it. We've worked at companies thought, this is not working, and no one is thinking about it. So I wondered, first of all, if you can tell us how you come up with the rankings. And in terms of number top three, we've got DHL Express, Cisco, and Hilton taking the gold, silver, and bronze this year.
Yes, 100%. And thank you so much for having me. We work with organizations around the globe to help them to become not just a great place to work, but a great place to work for all without any exception. The definition of a great place to work is how to improve your performance and your trust as well. And for us to understand how we can help you with this, organization has to have some great experience when it comes to their employees. So what we do is we assess the employees' experience, perception, about the organization, about their team, about the resources that they have, the overall experience. And we do that via our Trust Index survey that we implement with more than 20,000 organizations around the globe. Yeah. Based on that, we need to have an average statement, which is minimum of 64.5%, that they need to achieve by country for them to be certified as a great place to work.
Oh,
and
wow.
Based on that score, they will be able to enter the competition. And definitely, the higher the score is, the better in terms of achieving and to be part of the best workplaces.
It's really interesting that, you know, can we talk about the fact we're seeing some of the same big companies on that list? DHL has been consistently ranked very high.
Definitely. And DHL has been doing really well, not just from a local and global perspective, but also when it comes to the women. They were number 25 last year, and this year they were number one on the women list as well, the best workplaces for women in GCC. Basically, these organizations are interested a lot in their employee experience and making sure that they drive the performance and their employees in terms of trust, in terms of implementation, in terms of innovation, to make sure that COVID has been disruptive in many ways. What companies are focusing on at the moment is how can I get the most out of COVID and how can I be thinking about 2022 to be the year of pickup and 2021 year of pickup as well. So how can I do that and how can I make it happen? And that's the main question. What you need to make sure is that every employee matters, right? Every employee is an ambassador. It doesn't matter if he is going to be interacting with your stakeholders or not. Every employee matters. And you need to make sure that they are driven. They're not waiting for you to tell them to be driven.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what DHL has been focusing on in terms of an organization or all or any of the world best or any of the best workplaces in the Middle East or UAE or any other country as well.
It's really interesting to think about the criteria. Before we move on to what you think employees want right now, are there any new additions to the list, Ibrahim, that has taken you by surprise or you think are worth mentioning today?
So we are launching for the first time in the Middle East the best workplaces for parents.
Oh.
This is going to be taking on in 2022.
Oh, yeah. I have some feedback. Come to me. I have ideas. So that's going to be next year. And what about any companies on this current list that you think are doing something special that we should know about and perhaps other companies listening today could learn something from?
Sure. One of the key things that these companies are doing, not just locally but also globally, is focusing on their people and understanding their needs. We cannot move as we used to move previously. It's not about just looking at the business, but looking at your business objectives and the human needs that you have. Flexibility is a key element that everybody is looking at. We need to be flexible. It doesn't matter where you are. It's more about what you're doing and how can you help the organization to achieve their objectives. So that flexibility is a key element that employees are considering. And this is where we speak about the hybrid model. So you cannot just have people operating from 9 to 6 every day. This is not going to happen anymore. People are interested in flexibility. People are interested in understanding their needs when it comes to the work-life balance, when it comes to, you know, balancing. Because if you compare 2020 to 2021, you were working from home the whole time, and now you're back to the office. So you are used to a certain pace. That balance is also important to be looking at as an organization. And this is what these organizations have been doing, understanding their employees, activating their listening strategy, and involving their people before they take any decisions. And that's what matters.
Can I ask you, Ibrahim, about size of company and the importance that is? In terms of, are SMEs quicker to adapt to employee demands, or does it take a bigger company with the infrastructure and the experience to be able to respond and be agile?
I love this question, and if every time I got this question I take a dollar, I'll be a millionaire, to be very honest. But the main objective is, it's not about the size, it's about the company culture, and that's what matters to us. We have a lot of organizations in the UAE, in the globe as well, who are not as large or multinational, however, they're doing great. As an example, the One. which is a local or a regional business who's doing really well, and they were number one on the UAE list, as an example. So it's not about the size, it's more about the culture that they have and their scoring for sure, and how can they create a consistent experience. Because when you look at a small company, you have departments as well. Even if you're talking about a company of 20 people, as an example, or even 10 people, you have departments, you have managers, you need to make sure that every employee is driven by the mission of the organization. So it's not about just the size, but also about the culture. And this is where company come to me and say, Ibrahim, I'm a local business. How are you comparing me and how am I competing with multinationals? Mm. And this is where we say, it's not about your size. It's definitely about the culture within your organization.
Interesting. Okay. What do you think smaller companies that are more in tune with kind of that employee sentiment can do in the future to make it onto the list?
Definitely the implementation of best practices. We have a lot of SMEs in the UAE and in Dubai as well, in Abu Dhabi. We need to encourage this organization. So we have witnessed as a great place to work a huge number of participants coming in to be part of the program, but we want to encourage these people as well to be part of it as well. All these organizations, all these SMEs, we encourage them to think about a great place to work, because every company that starts small will get bigger. What you want to avoid as an organization is the snowball effect. As the larger you go, the more challenges you will have, the more concerns you have. You want to avoid that. So if you start with the right basics, with the best practices from the beginning, you will be able to grow organically and in the best way as well.
And let's talk about, you mentioned, you know, for next year, parents' best workplace, but you've also been looking at women in the workplace. And I'm curious what some of the criteria have been coming to the fore when it comes to women and what they want from their employers.
We want to understand the needs of every demographic, from a female perspective or from a millennial perspective or from a parent, from a father or a mother or a UAE national. It doesn't matter. For us, all of that matters. So it's not about where you're coming from or what do you do. It's about your experience. Mm-hmm. So when we look at these categories, we want to understand how is their experience. When you look, as an example, at the female experience, we actually compare it to the male experience and we have a scoring system, right? Is it the same for them? When you are a female, do you feel this is my place to be? I feel comfortable being here. Do I get, as an example, harassed, or do I get criticized for being a female, or do I get criticized for being a parent or from being a mom or for doing anything that is specific to that input? So that's what we try to support in terms of understanding these categories, and we're very open to add more and more as we go forward. We heard people and they said parents is something that we need to be looking at, and we're also interested to see what other lists we can add to make sure that we do well for the business community, not just locally but also globally.
Can I ask you personally what you would like to see in a workplace? What are some of the more novel ideas, whether that's from an HR perspective or from a facility point of view, location? What ticks your box, Ibrahim?
I think the main thing that ticks the box is basically being there and being an active listener to your people. So listen to your people, actively listen to your people before you make any decision. Involve them. Let them be part of the whole process and let them feel how important they are as an asset. They're not just a number. They're not just an employee. They are a key member and a key ingredient in the success of your organization. And this is how you can drive their innovation, their trust, their performance, and everything else as well.
So it's not about free pizza on a Thursday and a ping pong table. It goes a bit deeper than that.
Definitely the entertainment part is important. But what's more important, if you have a ping pong table in your office, which is fantastic, however, I don't feel comfortable working with the team that I have, or I don't feel comfortable with the resources that I have, yeah, or any other else, you're not going to be able to perform. So all of that matters, but there are key priorities. This is why the listening element is so important in the whole perspective. When you listen to them, you'll understand their concerns, you'll understand what's keeping them awake at night, why are not considering you as an employer of choice. And this is how you can actually control the turnover. We do know that in the UAE, the turnover rates are really high. And this is why we wanted to implement Great Place to Work in the UAE market, because we want to decrease that perspective and also to make sure that everybody look at their organization on the long-term perspective. We don't want people to be changing jobs every single minute.
We want people to feel, as you say, listened to, but also supported and in a place where they can grow. So I hope that's food for thought for lots of people out there, whether you're a manager, a business owner, or indeed an employee. And let's just quickly, you know, give a shout out to the people that have made that top five. So DHL Express, Cisco, Hilton, Abvi, Salesforce as well. And huge congratulations to everyone involved. Something to strive for next year. And it'd be really interesting to hear about what makes a good workplace for a parent. Ibrahim, thank you so much.
Thank you, Helen. And I just want to say we're calling these companies heroes because they were able to support and protect their people in the toughest time. The fact they were able to do all of that during the pandemic and the conditions we were in. So congratulations for being a superhero.
Well said indeed. Ibrahim, thank you. Wishing you and the team at Great Place Workmen all the very best. Keep us posted on the latest announcements. And it's always great to provide some inspirations. And you know, I think we can all do better. So thank you so much for putting numbers on it and offering that ranking and that opportunity to have this conversation.
Thank you, Helen.
This is Afternoons with Helen Farmer.
Join the conversation
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
You can tune into Afternoons with me, Helen Farmer, live on Dubai Eye 103.8, Sunday to Thursday between 2 and 5. Don't forget to rate and subscribe to this podcast. It helps other people find us, boost us in the ratings, and you'll get it direct to your phone.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.